Hello and welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. It is raining outside, probably, because we live in the UK. My name's Adam Cook and I am here with Christopher White.
Hello.
How are you, mate? All right?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I've had about half a thing of brie and some slices from some wafer thin ham.
Lovely.
Like a pack of wafer thin ham just to tide me over until tea time.
Very nice.
But I'm doing well, yeah, doing good.
But hey, this is the wrong podcast for food talk. We're here to talk
exactly. Games,
man.
Yeah.
It's just us this week. Scheduling, however you want to say that word, means that you are left with just Chris and just little old me. Well, huge old, fat old me is the truth of the matter. But that doesn't mean, and hey, listen, that means we can bring you some fat with a PH. Conversation about video. I should just start this podcast again, but I'm not going to because we live it real here, Chris.
Too right.
Truth be told, this is going to be a question. Well, a listener correspondence every week. There are games out, but at the time of publishing of this podcast, whether you're a Patreon, patreon.com/godisgeek. Oh, and by the way, we do a food podcast there and exclusive videos and lots more stuff, so get on that. But whether you're a Patreon or whether you're listening to this on the regular Wednesday, there's games we can't talk about. And that means we've got to dig deep and find the chat, Chris.
We can find it. I've got a few bits to sort of talk about.
Have you played anything you can talk about?
I have. I won't spend too long on this game, but I feel it does deserve a mention because it's very good. And that's a game called Lydia on the Switch.
Okay.
It came out a couple of years ago on Steam. And I'd heard nothing about it because it's from a relatively small dev team in Finland, I believe. But it's only like, I mean, it felt like it lasted about half an hour. But I think it's just clocks in under an hour. So it's not like there's not a lot to do. But it just tells the story of a young girl who comes from like a broken home where her parents are alcoholics. As you can see, it's pretty tough subject matter, but the way they've created this game and this fantastic art style, this hand-drawn black and white world, it's well worth checking out. I think it's £3.50 on the Nintendo eShop.
Oh,
so
wow.
Yeah, it's not much, but it's certainly worth having a look. I'll tell you what, the music is incredible. So for those that like a nice score of the game, go and check it out. But in terms of new games, I haven't played much other than about 20 minutes of a game that came out on Friday. Which
a game I very much want to play. But a game I can already guess 20 minutes is probably not enough, really.
No, not at all. And that is Dragon Ball Z Carrot. Sorry. No, I like saying carrot, though. Every time I see it, I think carrot. And because I don't really know much about the lore, I don't know what Kakarot is. Well, I don't know who Kakarot is.
Kakarot is Goku. That's his Saiyan name.
Okay. And what's a Saiyan?
It's the race that Goku belongs to. I don't like the
okay.
super strong.
Okay. And why has Gohan got a tail?
Because Saiyans are born with tails.
Okay, cool. Well, that just helps me out a bit. Cause,
I mean, do you know what? If you want to go down this route, we could just do this podcast about Dragon Ball because...
Well, I've got a lot of questions.
I watched it when I was younger. My wife and I do watch a bit of... We're trying to catch up on Dragon Ball Z Super very, very slowly.
But yes.
I can try and field any questions that, you know, from memory. Sure, there's a lot of Dragon Ball.
You see, I like my anime... weird and twisted and darker,
yeah,
because I like stuff like obviously Danganronpa the game was fantastic, so
yeah,
that kind of got me into a whole matter of like weird stuff.
That's not really the route Dragon Ball Z takes.
No, exactly. I mean, it's like the game itself. So I've had one fight so far, one proper fight, and it's the training mission with Piccolo.
Okay.
So I literally can't give an opinion on this game because it would be very unfair to do, especially with it being an RPG and probably taking a good 30-plus hours to play.
By the time people hear this on the Wednesday, the review will likely be up. Not by Chris, by Lyle,
no.
He's on that one. But just if you're wondering.
Yeah, exactly. But the combat is really, really good. And it reminds me of the Naruto games. You know, the Ultimate...
See that concerns me because some of them are good and others aren't. And the trouble is, Dragon Ball Z Fighters was amazing. Like, but
oh, yeah.
You're not going to get that in this. But also, no, they've shown how good it can be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Dragon Ball FighterZ, but this, it's like the Ultimate Ninja Storm games. So if you played those, the Naruto,
not for a long time, but yeah,
Shippuden, because the last one I reviewed was phenomenal. Like, I really loved it to the point I think I gave it a 9.5.
Blimey.
And the combat's just, as I say, it's going to change as you play through, and I've literally had one fight, but it's very fluid. There's a lot going on. With Naruto, a lot of the fights took place in the air, so there's a large ground to cover. But the combat's, you've got a lot at your disposal. Your Kai blasts,
yeah, cool.
Yeah. So you've got those at your disposal. You've got the simple, like the typical circle is your light attack, triangle is your strong attack. Then you hold L1 and it brings up four kind of like super powerful attacks. And your ki regenerates the more you fight, or is it Kai?
No, that's ki.
Honestly, ki. Right. So that regenerates with the more kind of attacks you get in. And it just looks super cool as well.
I was expecting it to be kind of budget looking, but everything I've seen in terms of videos and screenshots now, looks like playing a cartoon.
It does.
But also, the thing is, the cartoon wasn't like 60 frames smooth. It was so. There could be a bit of weirdness as well. I don't know. Like, I've got reservations because the thing is that the original story this game is telling, the original, well, not the original, the Dragon Ball Z original story, is kind of well trod. And the thing is, so there's Dragon Ball Z that is very long, and there are whole swathes of episodes where nothing happens, and eventually they kind of redoed them, like with Dragon Ball Z Kai. Even that had moments where it's like, this is still a bit too long in the tooth. So the idea of playing through that story in a JRPG where things are deliberately drawn out, I'm a little trepidatious about that idea. But I mean, to someone like yourself, if you've not seen the story, you're just not going to... I don't think you'll feel that, but...
No. I mean, one thing that I did notice from playing it is there's like a Dragon Ball Z encyclopedia. You pick up entries for your Z encyclopedia that kind of reference the story, things that have happened in the past, and that's kind of cool. And it's just like the bits outside the actual fighting, the main combats... feels very smooth to play, like the moving around the world and
yeah.
I mean, I'd certainly be playing more, but with as someone who doesn't know a lot about Dragon Ball, I'm enjoying it.
Cool.
I think they seem to have done a good job on it, and I think there's a lot there. There's a lot to take in. Like there's things with community boards where you can build partnerships with various characters, and then you can earn gifts and stuff to build those communities, and by building your friendships or relationships on this community board, you get certain powers when you fight with them and stuff like that. There's a lot to take in, but again, it's an RPG, so you should expect nothing less. But like visually, it's excellent. And also, what's really cool is that for those that don't like watching anime with the original Japanese voice acting, they've recorded it all in English as well,
right?
Which I think is a really nice touch, because it shows that they've taken a lot of care into making it available for any kind of anime fan. I mean, half an hour in, there's still a lot to play. But
that's like nothing, I suspect, of that
exactly
game.
Barely scratched the surface, but I'll certainly be playing more.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm looking forward to digging into that. I've cut you again. We've both been playing the same embargoed games. So we can't talk about that next week, I think, maybe, or the week after. I can't remember at this point, but we can't talk about it this week. Well, I've been playing a game called Super Crush KO. Again, I've not played, I played about an hour and a half of this. I think it's only 4 hours long. But this is a game I think is going to go massively under the radar. Lyle reviewed that one, actually gave it 9.5. Now, obviously, I'm not quite as hot on it as him, but it is a really good game. It's a 2D action platformer, but the combat is like DMC style. Like, you have...
Oh,
you know, kind of you combo it up and you try and get an S rank, and the visual style is going to put some people off because it's very pink. The pastel colors are like everywhere. And I won't spend a long time talking about it. Like, there's a video review, I would say go watch that, because you can listen to Lyle, who's finished it and thrashed it, actually. Like, he played more, loads more than he probably even needed to for a review. But you can see the game in action, and it is really colorful, quite stylish, kind of sweet, but it's just surprising. Really, they sort of come from nowhere, really early in the year. I'm not saying I think it'll be a contender or anything, you know, in a year's time. It's just, if you're in that sort of funk where you feel like you want something but you're not sure what, you could do a lot worse than Super Crush KO. I mean, I went and picked up Doom and Doom 2 on Switch because I wanted to play Sigil. And although I could just play Sigil on PC, I tend to work when I'm at the PC, so yeah. Like, I was quite pleased that Bethesda updated Doom. It literally sold. I was not going to buy, you know, a 1993 game again on Switch, but I'm kind of glad I did, because like, Doom's aged really well. Like, it's aged really well, to the point where I'm just sitting there enjoying it. My kids are actually playing it, you know, because although at the time it perhaps was scary, now the graphics mean it's not.
Yeah. But that's cool that when that kind of happens with games yeah, played as a kid, now your kids are playing them. It's like a really kind of special thing.
Like, my kids like shooters, so I feel like, especially my eldest, who loves first person shooters, it's kind of like, I think you need to play this, mate. It's a bit of an educational tool now. But it also, yeah, they've updated it so it's 60 frames. It just looks and runs great. They've updated the sound effects, and the sound itself has been upgraded because, like, the music was at the wrong speed, and they've resampled it properly.
Oh, wow.
And so they've added, like, add-on support, so there's potential they could keep... There's three at the moment. One of them is Sigil, which, if you're listening and you're going, why does he keep saying that? So Romero, obviously the person behind Doom, I suppose, made new levels for Doom, like a new chapter, and... It's called Sigil. Like, the soundtrack is actually done by Buckethead, and it's a lot harder, but obviously the Sigil version you get. And this is free, by the way, once you've downloaded Doom for, I think it's, at the time of recording, $3.99. Sigil's free, which is amazing. You don't get the proper soundtrack. It's like a MIDI soundtrack, like the old style. But yeah, Doom, I mean, it would be remiss of me not to say that new trailer for Doom Eternal is... how would you describe it, Chris?
I don't think there is a word. Not yet. I mean, we were spoiled.
Yeah.
On that day, there was a lot of cool stuff happening. Like, the Doom trailer, like, it just is everything we could ever want. I mean, it. How do you top a game like the Doom? Because I don't want to say Doom remake, but it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a
complete.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's
Doom for the current generation, and like, it was fantastic. We've talked about it no end. It's been in the game of the year pods, rightly so. But like, there are no words. That game is going to be exceptional, and like, the delay was worth it. Mm. You know, and with game delays, as we know, there's been quite a few this week.
I mean, how we might as well, before we get into the listener correspondence, I say it is a bit of a lean week for games because we can't talk about them, and it's that time of year. It's that funny time of year. How are you feeling about, like, two big delays? Final Fantasy VII, not delayed about a month, and Cyberpunk 2077, which has been delayed. Was it September? It's delayed
September too? The fourth, I think. Yeah, I mean, right, so. I've gone back to The Witcher this week, just because, like, I finished the show now on Netflix, and for people that, like, haven't watched the show, it is incredible. Especially if you've read the book, like, you don't have to read all of them, just even if you've just read The Last Wish, which is like the first book. It basically uses a lot from there, but it's fantastic, and like, I need somewhere to go to, because when a show ends for a while, you're left in mourning, aren't you? So. I need to fill that gap. So anyway, I went back to The Witcher And it just reminds you how fantastic CD Projekt Red are, like, at creating worlds. And with it being delayed for that long, you know, they're not doing it for no reason. But I mean, it's frustrating, yeah. But like, it will, I believe it will be worth it. They're not making a decision like that lightly. So yeah. I think for the world that we want, and for the story and the content that we're going to want, and the caliber of gaming that they're capable of making, I'm not happy about it. I'm confident there's a big reason behind it. And also, that time of the year is packed. You know, for us as a website, it helps us out a bit. And with a Final Fantasy, I'm a little gutted because I'm looking forward to that, but it's only a month, you know, and it paves the way for a certain other game in April that, you know, people might be excited for on the Switch. I believe it's April, isn't it?
No, that's March. That's March 20th.
All right, well, fuck it then.
Well, Animal Crossing.
Yeah, is that March?
Yeah, it's the same day. All right,
well, they've given people Doom's more chance. No,
it was Doom and Animal Crossing on the same day.
And Avengers has been pushed back as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, there wasn't an awful lot of reaction to that one. I have to say, I don't know if this is the end of the delays. I think there's... gamesmanship's the wrong term, but I think there's a fair amount of... Look, these studios will have dev kits for the new hardware now. Yeah. We've seen them. People have leaked, you know, photos of the new hardware. Well, not the new hardware, the new dev kits. So... There's a lot of things we don't know. Like, there's a lot of presumption, and in the past, for example, games they come out and then they come out again. The remaster or the HD up is, but the way Xbox are talking, the suggestion is that this time, as we've said before, well, they've kind of confirmed it. A game is a game, and that's interesting because that means that if, say, Cyberpunk comes out in September and the new hardware's in November. Does that game just work? And if so, how do the publishers feel about that? Because they can't sell you a second version. But something I was pointed out to me, and is definitely true, and I remember it now, I've been reminded, Assassin's Creed Black Flag had an upgrade plan where you could pay a little bit and it would unlock the PS4 version, if you remember.
Yeah.
So I wonder... If that's the kind of happy medium for publishers and hardware manufacturers, because I don't know, like what would they offer? You know, if Cyberpunk comes out and it's on hardware that can do 4K, that can do 60.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that version on Series X and PS5 going to be 4K 60? And if so. Because will people go? I've seen tweets that people have sort of said, oh, well, I'm going to wait then. I don't mind waiting a couple of months. The assumption is it's going to work on that console, the new console.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember when the PS4 came out, and the build-up to it, we saw games, like brand-new games that would come in exclusively to PS4 looked wonderful. And sometimes you can't always tell the difference with the next gen up at the very beginning, at the very end of a console's life, to move to the very beginning of another. But my experience with the PS4, I pretty much got it when it came out, but the games, they didn't have a lot of exclusives. And I got Black Flag, and I remember thinking, this doesn't look amazing. Like, it looks good, but like, how different would it have been on the PS3? Like, it didn't blow me away. So I don't see why... I just feel with new consoles, they need to open with brand new games. And if you're going to release Cyberpunk on the PS5, it doesn't need to come out at the start. So it seems, if that's why they're holding back, I think, I don't know.
I suspect it isn't the reason in truth, because it's too big of a delay. I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot going on in the industry at the moment. Like, you know, the again, unconfirmed, but maybe when you hear this confirmed, so quite well substantiated rumour that Horizon Zero Dawn is coming to PC. And the rumours follow from other sources that actually that won't be the only game. Like, I've heard rumours that Dreams is going to come to PC and stuff like that. And that makes you think, oh, Bloodborne, if it ran at 60 frames, you know.
Oh, God.
I've got absolutely no problem with any of that. Like, games are for everyone. And being quite honest, from a purely selfish perspective, if everything's going to come to PC now, even like first party exclusives, I'm good. I've got a PC that can run games. All right, I'm not going to be able to run them at 4K, but I can still play them. I would be. I'm curious. I'm really curious to see what these consoles are going to do to sell you the console, because you think about how consoles are announced. Here's our console. It's 4K. It's this. It's SSD hard drives, and we're going to bring you Uncharted 5 and GT 12. And if you do that. Do you remember when, like, Microsoft, everything, it became a bit of a meme where it's like, E3, it would be like, console exclusive. You know what I mean? Instead of like, and it became a bit of a meme because it's like, yeah, it's not actually exclusive. And it does seem to be now that people are like, oh, no, this is really cool. This is cool. PlayStation are letting their... It's like, hang on. If it's all right for one, it's all right for everyone. Why is the tide changing here? But I do wonder. We'll know, I guess... I get the feeling Sony are going to break cover soon, and
you'd think so, because they've obviously been very quiet. The only game we know officially is Godfall, isn't it? Which
But that's multi-platform. That's right. PC.
Well, there you go.
There's
literally nothing that they've. I mean, it might be the way forward though.
I mean, that,
cause if
that
Horizon's
game was actually
coming to PC,
announced in Epic's what's the Jeff Keighley one VGAs.
Game Awards, yeah.
Yeah, Game Awards. Yeah. That was actually announced. Yeah. It was on that trailer reel where they showed that game.
Right. So there you go. Epic game, so maybe that's just game. The way it is going to go. If Horizon's coming to PC, like, brilliant. It means more people can play the game.
That game could look pretty good on PC.
Oh, I mean, it was sexy indeed. On the PlayStation, but, oh, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Games that come from all your platforms, great. I don't see the problem with it. I don't see why people get so angry. Like, what does it matter if you get to play the game on the PlayStation 4? Play it. What does it matter that it then goes to PC? It doesn't affect you at all.
I would say there's a certain subset of people that get angry, and it's probably not people listening to this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of people listening to this podcast, Chris, this might be a bit of a shorter episode this week. As I say, it's a bit of a, we're in a lull and we can't talk about the games we're playing, and that's fine because that means you get an extra long podcast when we can't talk about them. But the people listening to this podcast have sent us podcast questions. We've saved a few up actually, so we've got quite a few to get through. We're starting with @deadbeatpunk, Christopher Love. I was wondering if you had any games that you loved as kids that you now realise were virtual turds. He says, mine was Thomas the Tank for SNES. I remember taking out Donkey Kong Country to play it. The shame.
That's amazing.
Now,
that's amazing.
This is
I don't even know that existed.
Me, and I think possibly for you, man, because a lot of the games I played as a kid were like Spectrum games.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that was my first foray, because my dad had a Spectrum, so all the games on there are probably the biggest bag of shit.
This is the thing,
they were fantastic at the time.
But was Manic Miner any good, really?
No. Did you ever play a game called Repton?
No, I don't think so.
So that was on the Spectrum. It was like you were this weird, like, humanoid lizard thing, and you had to move rocks. He's trying to explain it, it's going to sound shit. But, like, you had to move blocks and then get to the treasure, these gems, but rocks would fall on your head if you moved a block from underneath them. It was just typical shit gaming. But, like, I look back on that as brilliant because I was a kid, but it will be horrendous now. So there's not, like, any games that, like on... I mean, the games on the NES are probably shit. I liked
Alien. Home Alone 2 at the time on SNES, but that was a terrible game.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I remember, because you were going through like the hotel lobby, jumping around.
Yeah, that was really bad.
Yeah, like was it Jurassic Park on the Mega Drive? I used to love that, where you could be Alan Grant or you could be a Velociraptor. Quackshot, my memories of Quackshot, like, that is in my top 10 games of all time.
Okay.
But I bet it's horrendous now. So,
I think there are games that, like, do you remember Gauntlet?
Yeah.
I think Gauntlet was a good game. Like, so one series I always loved was the Dizzy games.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, but everyone seems to say they were shit now, and I loved those games.
They were great.
Like Treasure Island Izzy was my favourite.
Yeah.
Chase HQ, I suspect, was a terrible game even then, but I loved it because it was like, wow, this is a driving game. You know, Attic Attack, it's... I don't know, man.
Akari Warriors on the Master System. That was a beauty, that was. That will be shit now.
I mean...
I think with Thomas the Tank Engine, it's such an amazing... Like, I'm glad you own up to that, Chris, because that's fantastic. Like, I can't think of a game like that I played as a kid that was something as... I don't know. Fuck it, fair play, mate, but Thomas the Tank Engine on the SNES, I didn't even know it existed.
I mean, I remember playing a Batman game that was awful even then. But yeah. What it would have been.
Oh, there was a Batman based on the 1989 film.
Yes, that was Batman, the one.
I played that on the NES. And I remember going to Toys R Us and buying that. Well, my mum and dad got it for my birthday. And it was like 50 quid. Like back then. For a NES game. That's nuts. But I remember getting that and thinking, oh, this is awesome. Like, I'm jumping around as Batman. But then ever since, like when I did an article on Batman games.
That's
and
right.
I went back to that and looking at videos of it on YouTube, like, oh my good Lord. Like, so it's horrendous.
I'll get you the king of these then. Games you loved as kids, you realise are virtual turds. I'm going to have to bend the rules. Bubsy.
Yeah.
I liked Bubsy, and I'm led to believe it was a very bad video game. But it was out in the best possible taste. I liked Bubsy.
I remember playing Bubsy and liking it.
Yeah, I mean that's probably me finished in the industry. McPoo says, what is your favourite ever vehicle in a game? Land, air, sea, whatever. Something you just think is really cool and fun to use.
Yeah, see, I've got one.
Okay.
Instantly. Like, when I read this question, it came to mind almost instantly. And that's the Warthog from Halo.
I was thinking that direction too, but...
That was so wonderful to control... And I used to love tazzing around in it. And I just think it looked good. So,
right.
Like, that'd be one of my favourites, definitely.
I would...
The bikes in Destiny, they're always... I mean... Yeah, I quite enjoyed them.
I would say the Ghost from Halo.
Yeah.
I really like that thing. Vehicles in games, though, like... I mean, is it cheating to just say pilot wings?
No.
You know?
Yeah.
I would say the Ghost in... For me, it is Halo, but it's the Ghost that comes to mind because it's just a bit quicker and you can sort of get off the ground a bit more. Well, I suppose it's kind of the Alien, the Covenant version of the Warthog, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I drew a blank on this one, if I'm honest with you. I suppose it's Cid's airship in Final Fantasy VII for me.
Yeah.
Because you can just get around so quick. Or a chocobo in Final Fantasy VII. Anything in Final Fantasy VII, basically. Mm. That's my second favourite game of all time. So.
Yeah,
not a fun answer, but a truthful one.
All the X-Wings and Millennium Falcon and Battlefront.
Mm.
I have to say, I love them. But just because they're X-Wings and Falcon.
Oh, I suppose, I can't imagine
if it was something else, it wouldn't be the same. But yeah, but the Warthog, 100%.
I'll tell you one right now, controversial, that's up there for me. And you're not going to like this, so strap in, kids. The Batmobile in Arkham Knight. And that's that. I liked that vehicle. I enjoyed that vehicle. I liked being able to strafe in it. I did not understand the criticism and hate for that. Arkham Knight, I think, is just a masterpiece.
Oh, no, I agree.
So there. Thomas at LlamaFluff42 says, if you were a kid who was suddenly transported to the adult world like Tom Hanks in Big, what's the first thing you do with that newfound freedom? So he's asking us to pretend we're kids. I mean, oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Go to, oh, I don't know, because as
drive,
a kid,
probably.
Yeah, I think it would be driving, because as a kid, you're still relatively innocent, aren't you? So things like going to a bar and having a drink, you won't be thinking about as a kid.
I mean, snort coke? Does that?
I don't know.
Does that count? I mean, if I'm a kid who can be in the adult world, I can just.
I think also going from a kid to an adult and discovering the internet, like the endless possibility. I mean, I suppose nowadays kids can go on the internet and find shit anyway, but if we're talking 80s big, where the internet didn't exist and we grow up and we get to go on it, then maybe, but I'd probably go for a drink.
I mean, is it too obvious to say sex? Or is that weird if you were actually still a kid but into an adult world?
I think it's weird that as a kid you let that happen. Like Tom Hanks and Elizabeth Perkins in Big, it was always a bit weird that they kind of got together. Because she hadn't got a clue.
She doesn't know. He knows what he's doing.
No. Yeah. But then he's only got the mind of a child, so...
So devious, in other words.
Yeah. But is it weird?
I still think it's weird.
Yeah, I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Punch a swan. What about that?
He's got the... You what? Punch a swan?
Yeah.
Not if you want to commit treason, mate.
But they're arrogant. I think they look arrogant. I think swans look arrogant.
If you attack a swan,
yeah,
Queen will come knocking, won't she?
But I'm a kid, so you're not going to put me in prison. I'm just going to go back to
being
a kid.
But you're an adult.
Yeah, but for that moment, I'm going to go back to being a kid eventually, if I'm Tom Hanks in Big, and I'm saying that I think swans walk around with an air of arrogance, like they know they're protected, and I think they need an uppercut. That's what I'm saying.
Would you uppercut a swan?
Well, I don't know how else you'd do it.
Well, I'd like to use a tool, like use a bat. Like if you
that
like,
seems excessive, Chris. I have to say,
yeah, but you're uppercutting a swan. Like it's still, it's going to hurt it. You probably kill it catch it at the right.
Well, no, you've ruined
I don't know.
It.
I don't know.
I don't want to kill it. I just wanted to teach you a lesson. Like I just.
Well, you could if you're going to teach it a lesson, then don't hit it. Violence.
What
isn't
about
the answer.
if because they've got their heads all up in the air, like arrogant, like I say, chins right up, looking up at the sky. What about if I put a trip wire that made them trip over a bit?
Yeah.
There you go. If I was a kid who went from a child into Tom Hanks in Big, I would lay a rope-based trip wire to make a swan fall over to teach them a lesson about arrogance and humility.
And make sure other birds were around to watch it trip over so they can laugh at it.
Mm.
So cause psychological damage more than physical.
Speaking of animals, Chris, what's the most troublesome pet you've ever had?
I've only ever owned three pets.
Okay.
So I would say Mabel, my last dog, was a nightmare when we first got her because, like, Betty's so, like, she's so lazy, she's easy
Betty
to manage.
Betty is the dog, by the way, just...
Yeah, not my wife.
No.
But Betty just sleeps all day. She's just lazy. She plays, but she'd be quite happy just lying on the floor doing fuck all, which is a sweet life. But Mabel, when we first got her, she was a nightmare. But that's kind of what was endearing in the end. Like we loved her craziness, but she was probably the most horrific pet in the beginning because she just wouldn't behave, and it took a while to get her to train to be a good dog, but she was special. But yeah, I would say Mabel,
okay,
my second dog.
For me, it would be, I mean, I was a child, but it was one of our childhood dogs called Scamp. This dog was mental, man. He ate everything and anything. Like, my parents used to have more of a, well, they had more of a social life than I fucking do, but they used to have people around, and you know, we kids would go upstairs and play on the old Mega Drive or something, or then we'd come down for a bit and you know, whatever. And like,
yeah,
one of my mum's friends would just put a glass of wine on the floor, the dog would just start drinking the wine, and they'd have to take it away. And like, my dad was a smoker, so he'd leave his cigarettes around, and the dog would just take them and the lighter and go off chewing them, and you're like, oh my god, he's got a lighter. And it's Jesus. Like, what is he enjoying about this? He once, and I promise you this is as mental as it ever got, he once picked up a glass and started breaking it and trying to eat the glass. And it's like, You are mental. And this dog, like, I bought my dad, saved up as a kid and got him, with my mum's help, got him like this really nice chess set. Chewed every piece of that chess set up, destroyed it.
Bastard.
All the way from Spain, we got that. yeah, like, he was, I miss him. Like, he was a wonderful dog, an idiot dog, but dogs. what do you see? Another question comes. What do you see, Chris, as the solution for ailing game stores on the high street? Should they specialise in retro instead, or try to offer more of an experience like demo pods, etc.?
I'd think it's. I think it's not going to get any better, to be honest. I don't think there's anything they can really do. I think you get plenty of demos dropping on the store, various stores. You buying a game. I mean, people still like physical copies, but they're a lot cheaper online. Mm. And obviously, the digital stores are thriving. I just don't think there's a way that they can do it. Lower your prices, offer maybe more demo ports, but still, it's just, I don't know. I think it's a failing idea, really, to try and get more people into these stores or trying to fix them, because I don't think there's a way.
So for me, I think the time has come to bring back game rentals, because with the ridiculous lack of demos for games nowadays, I think there's a market, not to like bring back Blockbuster. I don't think there's a market for a rental only business in this world. But could the likes of Game rent you a game for a week or a month and or whatever? You know, that might be the way. I don't know if that would bring enough in.
Because before I started with God Is a Geek, I used Boomerang.
Yeah,
and there, like, I remember.
What was the Love Film equivalent? Was that them?
Love Film because it was.
They did games, didn't they?
Because it was before Netflix was, yes, Love Film, wasn't it? They did games that you could do, but then, like, Boomerang, my first game was Metal Gear Solid 5, and I got it a day before it came out.
No, Love Film. Amazon brought Love Film.
So was Netflix just a movie rental?
Netflix
rental,
was just Netflix, yeah.
Oh, okay. But yeah, look, they did games. I think that's not a bad idea if Game can accommodate that. But
I'm available for your marketing meetings and ideas, people.
There are seldom game stores in England, at least. Like, I can't think of many more than CEX, but that's not new games.
No. But what I'm thinking is, like, Bloodborne, you might hear about, oh, this is the most amazing game ever, amazing, amazing, amazing. But you're like, yeah, but I don't really like those games. There's no demo. But if you could rent it.
No.
And then might go, oh, I love this, I want to buy this.
But then it's in the sale on PSN.
No, I mean, like, obviously not now, because it's...
Oh, on its release.
Yeah, like, when a game that is, you know, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if that... I think that's all they could try, but I would imagine if they haven't tried it already, there's a damn good reason for that. Next question. An alien crash lands on our planet and you are keen to show him our way of life. Well, you don't know me very well then. After Dairy Milk, you broach the topic of gaming. What game would you show the alien that clearly encapsulates all that's good about gaming? The one that sums it up best, the most gamey game?
I would probably start with a Mario game, because there's no violence. It's a perfect... Let's go Super Mario World.
Okay.
Just because it's a perfect video game. It's incredibly fun to play. It teaches them what is at the heart of video games, what everyone wants out of a video game. And it's gives me a reason to play again.
I would go... I mean, you've taken Mario, so I would go Pac-Man Championship Edition DX2, because Pac-Man is Pac-Man, and that is the best version of Pac-Man. And it is such just a gamey game. It's anyone can understand it. This version is particularly bright and colourful and, like, makes you go, oh my God, what's this? Yeah, I think it'd be Pac-Man.
Failing that, Halo. Because then I'll show him, like, you mess with us, mate. This is what you get.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I suppose, fair point. I would, yeah, I mean, yeah. The God is Geek team, Chris, is given an apprentice-style task to devise an advertising campaign for underpants with a flatulence-filtering undercarriage system. What would the marketing campaign look like? What would the catchy slogan be? And what roles would you assign to each team member? Well, I'd just like to say that right here and now, Gary would be the sniffer to make sure that this under the flatulence description. This is a weird question because when I was a kid, I came up with the idea that someone should sell jeans with pot puree kind of laced into them. And I was convinced that this was my $1 million idea, that I could make a fortune this way. And, I mean, no one's done it still, I don't think.
Are we filtering the smell, then?
Yeah. Yeah, fart filters.
But that why would you do that? One of the best things in life is doing a fart and waiting for the response. I suppose if you're out and about, they work.
That's the thing is, that's one of the best things for you. If I'm with you, it's not one of the best things for me.
Yeah, but it's funny. Like, it would be funny for you. I think farts aren't appreciated properly.
No, I'm a big fan of them. I'm just saying. Like, I think for me, the marketing campaign would involve lifts. I think it would involve someone stood there, if you can conceive this a minute, for there's a crowded lift, and someone sort of leans their shoulder up, and then you hear, and then the person who does it is looking around going, oh, nobody's looking at me because they can't smell it. It's fine. The flatulence has been filtered. That would be it. That would be the simple 30-second ad. And what would the slogan be?
I don't know. I'm just trying to think. Adam Carroll would be in the ad.
He'd be the one doing
it. He'd be the one in the jeans or the whatever, the pants.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
What would the slogan be, though? Farty fun times. Farty fun times where no fart goes I don't know. This is a lot to ask of us.
Because Apprentice goes on for weeks.
Yeah.
And a single idea is taking over 45 minutes. Maybe we need to prep. But
now we've given you the advert. Now even Trump can Trump.
Yeah, there you go.
Something around.
You're fired.
Don't be a Donald. No. This might need revisiting. Steve Chambers. He says he's been trying to play Metroid games for about 20 years, but I can't seem to see any of them through to completion. I've started Samus Returns and Metroid Prime numerous times, and every time I've bounced off them after a few hours. I'm currently on attempt 429 of getting further than Kraid on Super Metroid before putting it down for another year. Bizarrely, I really like the Metroid universe and shouldn't have any reason not to love and finish the games in this series, apart from The Other M, which can fuck right off. Which I have sealed in my drawer, actually, Steve. What do you consider to be your nemesis game or game series? Do you think you'll ever complete it? Any games that on paper you should love, but in practice you just don't get on with? Thanks, dudes.
So
Great question, by the way.
I feel I may have mentioned this in a variation of this question before, but Bioshock. Like, you know, I've not finished that.
Yeah.
And I've tried that 4 times. And it's not because it's a bad game. It's in a world that I do love.
Yeah.
And the gameplay is wonderful. But for some reason, and I still don't know the twist. I don't know anything past where I am at. I mean, I can't remember exactly. I think I'm about 5 hours in. But every time I go back to it, and I want to go back to it, either something else comes up and I get invested in another game, or, well, that's pretty much it. There's no reason for me to stop playing it. I played, when Bioshock Infinite came out, I played that through all the way and adored it. Like, I love Bioshock Infinite. There was no moments like that where I stopped and went away and came back months later, but since it came out, I've gone back to it about 4 or 5 times and still not finished it. So I'd say that is probably the main one that I can think of where I don't know if I'll ever finish it.
Mine's very similar. I think my nemesis is Persona 5. I loved that game, but it was, there just came a point where I had it like 6+ weeks pre-release. Myself and Mikhail were playing it, and he was reviewing it, and I wasn't. And he was telling me how long it was, and as you say, other things come along, and then eventually the game reviews went out, and people were like, yeah, it's 100 hours. And I had this moment of realization that I'm never going to finish this. Yeah. Because that's like MMORPG hours where you dedicate all your time to playing one game. And that, if it came to Switch, I'd have a chance, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. Because you could take it. It's like Persona 4 Golden. Oh, that was a long game, but because it was portable, you could, pop a few hours in here and there on your journeys.
The trouble is, like, the question is really, is there one that you're not doing because you don't get on with it? I mean, I've had that problem with Dishonored, and I finally did get on with Dishonored 2, but I didn't actually finish that. In principle, those games should be like all-timers for me.
Yeah.
But I just have never got through them. And they always, like Dishonored 2, for example, like I actually really dug the gameplay, but on Xbox One X, it just felt so janky and like it ran poorly. And I just, it always feels like I'm rubbing up against the game instead of just enjoying its mechanics. And like,
yeah.
Yeah, I will finish that one day. The other one, I suppose, Metal Gear Solid 3 and Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. Now, that game on paper is Adam Cook the game. But I played that, and at the time, the camera just felt like, how are they looking past this? This camera is broken.
Yeah, it's not the best.
But yet, the game should be everything. I've got it on Xbox One, like the backwards compatibility, to play it at some point. And Metal Gear Solid 3, I have tried with that game. Like I have actually sat down with my friend who lauds it as one of his favourite games of all time and watched him play it to try and get what am I not getting? And I can't. I don't know what it is about that game. It just does nothing for me. Like Metal Gear Solid 2, Metal Gear Solid, loved it. Metal Gear Solid 4 I even played a bit of. 5's amazing. Yeah.
It's quite a departure, isn't it? There's a lot of survival elements and there's a lot to kind of manage.
I will never finish that game.
Yeah. Which is a shame, because the ending to that is, it's peak Metal Gear.
Well, that also puts me off a bit, so.
No.
Nick yeah. Gillam asks, as we rumble into a new console generation, could it be argued that this was the most transformative console generation ever? He's referring to, I believe, like the fact that games across platform were starting them and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think in those kind of terms, definitely.
I don't agree, personally. But, go on, sorry, carry on, Chris.
No, that's fine. I was just saying, talking about cross-platforming, yes. But there's a hell of a lot of harking back to old games and bringing them out again, and it just feels like most of what came out was a game that had previously been out on an old console or a remake of an old game. There was a lot of new stuff, but there's a lot that kind of held it back with re-releases and remasters and shit like that. I think it really brought out what the best of them. The
thing is, if you were looking at a modern generation to say that, for me, like one of them would be 360, because that game literally brought that's where HD gaming came into it. You know, that's when people started upgrading and buying flat panel TVs, and it wasn't just a case of, oh, my posh neighbour's got a plasma. It was like, no, I'm going to buy that Samsung 32-inch TV that everyone had for a bit, the 720p one. And like, and it also really brought online gaming. Like, think about how behind Sony were, because that 360 was always ahead of it. You know, we can't say what the game is, but we played a co-op game together this very week, or last week when you're listening, and like one of the things I said to you was, I wonder if the PS5 will do online invites better, because it is better than it was, the PS4, but it still has that kind of PS3-ness to it, a bit where it's like you're sending a message, whereas with Xbox you just press a button, tap another button, and you're there. Like the Xbox did online gaming, but the 360 was the key, I believed, and like without it we don't have games as a service. Like the 360 generation, and PS3, of course, but that generation,
Oh yeah, no, the Xbox
would be more of one superior. For me, I think, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah,
last question then, and last part of this podcast. You're given the budget to make your own soap opera. It's called Geek Street. What are the major storylines and what characters do you play? Is Nicola a crazy, reclusive cat lady who for some reason wears an eye patch and talks about shivering timbers? The possibilities are endless here.
Oh, man.
I don't think Nicola's a reclusive cat lady. I think she's the cat lady who stands on the street corner shouting at people about Sea of Thieves, of course.
Yeah.
Possibly with like a cat named like Phoenix or Marcus or Lancer.
Mm. Oh God, storylines and all. There's a lot of big questions. Like we've got to come up with a business proposal for stink-free pants, and now we've got to come up with a whole show.
Well, Gary falls out with someone each week because of one of his opinions. Eventually, the street, Geek Street, gets together and kidnaps him and locks him in a caravan until he agrees to change his ways. That's series one. That's like the through line of series one. Okay. Series two, Mick becomes a bodybuilder and gets addicted to performance-enhancing drugs. And we have to fix him, if you will. Mick Fraser, like that is. You know, he just
it's
gets
like a
real...
serious... Yeah. Like Grange Hill. That's what happened there. He deal with some serious
this
shit.
Is it. This is it.
Yeah.
You get addicted to animals and you just end up with a house full of animals. A bit like Hoarders, but for pets.
And then Nick moves in because she's a crazy cat lady. Yeah. She appreciates my animal love.
I mean, do I really need to say what my storyline would be? I mean, it involves heart attacks, doesn't it? It's pretty,
Who else we got? Oh, God. Lyle. He's just lovely.
He is.
He just... Not that everyone else isn't.
Nah, but Mick Doherty gets elected to be the Prime Minister of Scotland, and hilarity ensues. He makes Pokemon Go a requirement every day.
Yeah, there you go. Simple as that. People want to watch this.
That's a lecture long series, that one, and there's a Christmas special.
Yeah, I watched that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Well, we don't think we're full of firing on all the cylinders in terms of creativity.
No.
Geek Street.
It's a lot
great
to name. Ask of us. It's a lot to ask of us, you know. We need time to plan this.
It's essentially Leisure Suit Larry, the TV show, isn't it? It's...
Yeah.
And, you know, all the games, which it's Jumanji as well, because like we play games and they come to life. When we get to like series 12 and people have got bored the show, we bring it to life by featuring a different game each episode that comes to life. And then some
wicked. Your show.
We become
pirates.
And then at some point, like all the cast of Friends move into town, and we spend a couple of series just sitting around drinking coffee, being fucking hilarious, and getting up to all manner of japes and you know,
Oh, can we recreate the intro?
Of?
Around the fountain. Friends.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's because it's quite a rural street, Geek Street, so it's just like it's like a trough full of pig shit and mud.
Pig shit.
It's a different intro. And the umbrellas do nothing, you know. That's your show.
Sweet.
It's your show.
There you go.
That's it. And to remind people as well, obviously, I did mention it very, very quickly at the start, but on patreon.com/godisageek, you can find us, and we have three tiers. $1 gets you this podcast early. $5 gets you all of that, but you also get the food podcast every fortnight, which is called Fork Off. You get $10 gets you exclusive videos, and again, all of those previous things and giveaways, which we're going to do soon. And $30 gets you a God is a Geek t-shirt that is made by Insert Coin and is at the back the ketchup thing. We ask all the developers and publishers, where'd you keep your ketchup? It's in the fridge, obviously. We know that. Don't at me, because actually, there's genuinely... No, do. Actually, at me. That's fine. I won't see it. Do also go to youtube.com/godisageek. We are near a nice big round number, and when we hit that round number, we're going to do a giveaway. We don't know what yet. It might be a couple of games or some gift cards, but we're going to do that. So make sure, if you don't watch us all that much, you just like this podcast, just subscribe to it anyway, because, you know, you'll get a little notification if you hit the bell, and we'll do a giveaway when we hit that nice round figure.
Mick's going to do a nude photo shoot for you.
Mick is not going to do a nude photo shoot. That's only for Patreons. But yeah, Chris, where can people find you on Twitter or wherever you want them to find you, I suppose?
They can find me at FirstAvenger83 on Twitter.
Okay.
And on Facebook as my real name, which
that
is Arthur McGinty.
But... Oh, okay. That's fine. Yeah. That is it for this week, Chris. Thanks for being here.
No worries, mate. Thanks.
Reminder that you can send questions to us at GodIsAGeek on Twitter, podcast@godisageek.com if you want to email nice long ones. Discord, you can find us anywhere you want. It's just send
email
us questions.
a nice long one.
Look at that, right at the end we found the episode name. Thanks very much for listening, everyone, and we'll speak to you next week or whenever you choose to listen. Bye for now.